most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today it is Thursday, June 21st. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition. Just visit norml.org to get involved with legalization today. Also, we have our eBay store going again here this summer for Normal. Got some auctions up, some great t-shirts and other wearables in the Normal eBay store. Links to that on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. But without ado, we have a lot to get to here today, so let's get right into our audio stash for this Thursday. On the program, we're going to speak with two of the most instrumental individuals at Common Sense for Drug Policy. CSDP publishes a number of first-rate resources in print and online regarding prohibition reform. We have links to them all up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. First today, we're going to speak with a former director of Normal and now the co-director of Common Sense for Drug Policy, Kevin Zies. Kevin, welcome here to the Audio Stash today.
Thanks for having me on.
It's wonderful to speak with you today, Kevin. Along with a career in activism and working at Common Sense for Drug Policy, you ran for U.S. Senate last year in Maryland. If you would, tell us about that experience.
Yeah, I ran for U.S. Senate as a candidate bringing together the Green Party, Libertarian Party, and Populist Party. And it was the first time ever that the Greens, Libertarians had nominated the same candidate, so that was a breakthrough. And it was also the first time in Maryland's history that we had a debate, actually a series of debates, with three candidates in a general election. They've always been two candidates in the past, and they've kept the third parties out, so we broke through and got into the debates. But the challenge I didn't realize was getting the debates is only part of the problem we face. The other problem we face is getting the media to cover the debates. And so what I found, I think, was that our system is in really bad shape. Our electoral system's in really bad shape. It needs lots of work. But I also find that people are looking for new voices. And the challenge we face is to have them the courage to support the new voices when they even agree with them, because people get so stuck in the mindset of, I got to vote for the winner, or only two can win. And they don't realize that the history of change in this country has often come from outside the two parties. And if you look back in history, for example, back to the 1850s, step out of the present where it's so hard to see what's going on sometimes. But if you look back in history, there were two parties, the Whigs and the Democrats, They both profited from slavery. The Democrats were plantation owners. The Whigs were northern industrialists who profited from cheap cotton. And then neither party would discuss slavery. And as a result of 100 years of effort of trying to change and end slavery, the abolitionist movement started to get involved in electoral politics, and they started various abolition parties that got very small percentage of the vote, 5% of the vote, and you know, other single-digit numbers. But gradually it evolved and turned into the Republican Party that elected the most successful third-party president in history. But it was those people who voted in those 5% races that were right in history, and that really were the forefathers of ending slavery. And so just as today, the key issue we face in almost every fact, every problem in our government is corporate control of government, whether it's health care, whether it's even drug policy, whether it's the war, oil profits, energy problems, a whole range of issues. Corporate control of government is the root cause, and we need to challenge the two parties that profit from corporate government. And we're not doing that by supporting either Democrats or Republicans.
And running outside the two major parties, do you feel that that offers candidates a lot more freedom to address some of the most pressing problems in our country, like prohibition, in a fashion that is perhaps more constructive, more about solutions than rhetoric?
You're not controlled by the party hierarchy. You're not controlled by the funders of the party. And you have those constraints lifted. And so you can, third-party candidates can be the ones who are the truth tellers. And I think that's one of the functions that we serve is even though we may not win an election, initially at least, we do come forth to the public as people who are telling the truth. And on drug policy, there are lots of issues that are uncomfortable. I know when I ran for Senate in Maryland, when I would tell the public that Maryland has the most racially unfair drug incarceration rate in the country, with 90% of those incarcerated being African Americans, there was definitely shock in the audience when they heard that. And particularly in Maryland, where African Americans make up about 30% of the voting population, and where the Democratic Party relies heavily on the African-American vote for its success. And so Democrats who've been in office most of the time in Maryland, you know, have put together this criminal justice system that is very unfair to African-Americans. And so, yeah, it's a real opportunity to tell it like it is and really put the other candidates in the position of responding to that. Are you going to tell us the truth as well about this problem? And I think that's an important thing to do. And it's not just the drug issue. It's so many issues, from the Iraq war to health care. You pick the issue. We are free to tell the truth, and I think that's a great benefit to the electoral system. Because elections are not just about winning and losing. Well, that's obviously the goal. They are also about areas where we fight out public policy issues, and we set the agenda for the public debate and the political and policy agenda. And so the election plays a role of being a opportunity to really to get the public behind issues.
You know, and having run for major office here and working with CSDP on a variety of information-packed websites, do you think that the Internet really is the place that much of this reform is going to happen in our modern age?
The web is really the last area of real free expression in this country. We see the media, the mainstream media, owned by a smaller and smaller number of companies, and we see people losing interest in both the television news and in the print media. You know, print media peaked at 65 million readers per day of newspapers back in 1984. It's been dropping ever since, now down to about 42 million readers per day and dropping about 2% a year. And the same thing is true if you look at cable TV news and network TV news. Their readership is also dropping. Where it's going to is the web. And so the web is becoming the key information source. And so at Common Sense for Drug Policy, thanks to the leadership of Robert Field and the excellent work of Doug McVeigh, we've developed a pretty powerful website and a very easy-to-use website. And one of our goals is not just to put the information on the website and leave it there, but to get it out more broadly. And we do that in a couple of ways. One is we provide materials to other drug policy organizations. I think we're very proud of Drug War Facts, which is a compilation of facts with citations on key drug policy issues. So with Drug War Facts, any drug policy advocate can open that book up or open that web up and have with in front of him or her the most up-to-date information on all the key issues. They can debate the drug czar with great credibility and cite sources that are hard to deny. So that really not just provides information on the web, but really raises the level of discourse put out by the anti-drug war movement. We also try to combine our web presence with a public advertising campaign, a public service advertising campaign, where we publish monthly ads in news weeklies or biweeklies. These are our magazines like The Nation and National Review and Weekly Standard, New Republic, Prospect, various magazines at different times, but those are some magazines we've advertised in the last few years. And each ad, of course, raises a key issue and then links to our website. And the purpose of advertising in those venues is we're trying to reach opinion leaders. Those are magazines read by people who work in government, people who are legislative aides, people who work in policy think tanks, and advocacy groups, nonprofit organizations, and in the media. Both television producers and writers and editors read those magazines just to keep up on the news. And so by advertising there, we get a lot of bang for the buck. We're reaching people who are opinion makers. We refer them to our website where they can get all sorts of information. And we've seen over the course of the years we've run these ads how our ads have influenced the mainstream media. We've seen language from our ads getting into the mainstream media. We've seen the issues we raise getting into the mainstream media with our kind of perspective. So the web is something that is a great tool, and I think it's important to have powerful material on your website, but it's also important to somehow tie the web into your other methods of communication, whether it's advertising, whether it's press releases, whether it's working with other organizations. You know, you got to get people to come to your website. Having it out there alone is not enough. But that's a first step, and then you got to figure out how to market it and spread the word.
Now, Kevin, having this Senate run under your belt, what's next for you? Is there perhaps another Senate run or perhaps a congressional run in your future?
Well, you know, for me, the political run was a tool to try to get out the messages that I'm working on. I ran on a peace, justice, democracy, and prosperity slate. The major justice issue I focused on was the drug war. And so if I see in the future that that's a good way for us to advance the causes I'm working on, I run a national nonprofit working on the Iraq War, democracyrising.us. I also run a share a group called votersforpeace.us. I've been involved in democracy issues, trying to get voter-verified paper ballots in Maryland and nationally, and work with TrueVote Maryland, TrueVoteMD.org, which is our a group we started in Maryland. And Vote Trust USA, which is a national group working on that. So for me, the electoral system is a tool to advance the cause. And if I see an opportunity, I'll use it for that purpose again. But it's always a balance on whether running for office is the best way to use your time or whether doing the advocacy work is the best way of doing your time, to use your time. And so that'll depend on the future. I have a hard time predicting what I'm going to have for breakfast tomorrow, so it's awfully hard to predict. So I'm going to make the big effort to run for office again in the future. It's certainly a possibility, and I found it to be a really enriching experience that certainly expanded my base of support in Maryland and nationally, and provided me with a lot of new activists to get involved with projects, and gave me some entree into places I wouldn't have had before. So I think it's a very valuable tool, and I'd urge other activists to consider it as a way to operate. I know in talking with other drug policy reformers who run for office, they want to run again because they found it to be so useful, and I can understand that. It is a powerful way to push our issues forward.
Righto, Kevin. Well, thank you again for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Happy to do it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again. Kevin Zeese is co-director of Common Sense for Drug Policy. We have links to their many informative websites up at normalaudiostash.com. Now let's take a quick break here to listen to a great tune. Here's the wonderful, beautiful star modern folk singer Dar Williams. Her record company gave us special permission to use this next track. It's called The Pointless Yet Poignant Crisis of a Co-ed from the Dar Williams album Mortal City. After this track, we'll speak with the Director of Research and main webmaster at Common Sense for Drug Policy, Doug McVeigh. Stay tuned right here to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Here's Dar Williams. We have links to her up at iTunes and her website, right up at normalaudiostash.com.
Of one, but there was a time way back many years ago in college. Don't laugh, but I thought I was a radical. I ran the Hemp Liberation League with my boyfriend. It was true love with a common cause, and besides that, he was a Sagittarius. We used to say that our love was like hemp rope. 3 times as strong as the rope that you buy domestically. And we would bond in the face of oppression from big business and the deans. But I know there was a problem. Every time the group would meet, everyone would light up. It made it difficult to discuss glaucoma and human rights, not to mention chemotherapy. In ridiculous packaging. So I found him in the arms of a student against the treacherous use of fur. And he gave no apology, he just turned to me, stoned out to the edge of oblivion. He didn't pull up the sheets, and I think he even smiled as he said to me, "Well, I guess our dreams went up in smoke." And I said, "No. Our dreams went up in dreams, you stupid butthead." And another thing, what kind of a name is students against the treacherous use of fur? Fur is already dead, and besides, a name like that doesn't make a good acronym. I am older now, I know the rise and gradual fall of a daily victory. And I still write to my senator saying they should legalize cannabis. And I should know, 'cause I am a horticulturist. I have a husband and 2 children out in Lexington, Mass. And my ex-boyfriend can't tell me I've sold out, because he's in a cult and he's not allowed to talk to me.
That was the incredible Dar Williams here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash today. Her record company gave us special permission to play that track from her album, Mortal City. Don't you be a sellout out there, and definitely try not to join any cults. Make sure you keep writing your senators and congresspeople, though. It's a great track there. We have links to Dar Williams up on our website today and to our iTunes page for that album, Mortal City, at normalaudiostash.com. Next up today in our profile of Common Sense for Drug Policy, we're going to speak with Doug McVeigh, the Director of Research and the man responsible for corralling the mountain of information on the various CSDP websites. Doug, welcome here to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Chris, thanks for having me.
Doug, you produce an amazing amount of material up there. You edit the main CSDP.org website, as well as Drug War Facts and Drug War Distortions, along with the print publications that Common Sense for Drug Policy produces. I've seen you at conferences, blogging, and gathering research. You know, let me ask you something I posed to Kevin Zeese. You know, how important do you think the internet is in changing prohibition policy in America?
It's a very vital tool. It is, for years now, we tried to get our information out to the public, print materials, etc. And, you know, we produce some very good stuff, but unfortunately it's a question of getting these items into the hands of people when they need them. And with the net, you can really do that, whether people are in debates or trying to write a letter to the editor or just trying to rack their brains to remember what some of those numbers were. It's really useful to have some of these tools on the internet, things like Normal's website with its fantastic listing of the different state laws, the medical marijuana programs, etc. Mapping with its archive of news articles from the past several years, and modestly speaking, the Drug War Facts and CSDP websites, which are pretty much archives of current and very good information, full citations, etc.
You also produce an annual print edition of information that goes out to media and policymakers around the country. You know, Doug, how big of a job is it to edit and produce that print edition?
I'm in the process of putting together the new edition now. I began going over sections and sending them over to our typesetter. We have a guy who we work with who's doing our layout work. Anyway, I've been sending material over to him for the past couple of weeks. I have one more section to complete. It's pretty hefty, frankly. And then I have proofreading. We plan to take the next couple of months to proofread, tighten the thing up. If there are any new items that get added, they'll be thrown in. But because of the limitations of space for when it comes to print material, I have to cull a lot of stuff, remove a lot of stuff from the book to streamline it. So the process has already begun. We're planning to have the print edition finished and delivered by mid-September, and that's working pretty steadily on the thing. So we figure it's a process that's going to take 3.5 months.
And Doug, I know you field a lot of media inquiries as well. You know, what are some of the more common questions and focus points that you get from the media?
Oh, all kinds of stuff, really, when it gets down to it. I mean, it's finding out some of the details. There's a great deal of misinformation, of course, about marijuana and medical marijuana, as mm-hmm. we all know, and generally regarding drug policy. When I worked for Normal many, many years ago, back in the late 1980s, it was somewhat frustrating because we could talk about marijuana laws and changing these policies, and, well, sure, okay, that sounds good, this all makes sense, but then there are these other drugs, and these are some big issues, and these are some serious things, all this money and the gunplay and violence. I mean, the hard drugs, narcotics trafficking, that's more associated with that stuff than with marijuana. What do we do about all these things? And, of course, working at Normal then, I had to shift gears and say, well, we just address marijuana. Back in those days, at least, we only addressed marijuana. Personally speaking, I could talk a bit. It's a lot, and it's somewhat funny, too, because now I talk about drug policy, but even there, well, that's drug policy. Now, ultimately, speaking personally, there's a lot more that needs to be dealt with, because when it comes down to it, I'm a social justice activist. Same for Mike Gray and the others involved in CSDP have our own reasons, of course, but I'm a social justice activist. I don't have the ability to allow a bad law to go unchallenged, and I don't like to see people's rights get trampled on. And when you combine those things, it's pretty much inevitable I'm going to start getting active. So back when I started getting involved in drug policy, there weren't that many people doing this stuff. Still aren't, really, when you get down to it. But I decided this was a niche that really needed to be filled.
And do you think the issue of prohibition reform, and also, you know, learning about it online at home or even at school, that this is essentially a mainstream activity right now, a mainstream topic, that prohibition reform is something a lot of people are interested in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we always ran into was people having, being concerned about somebody seeing the M word on materials that they're reading or that they're receiving through the mail. The computer makes it a lot easier to go to different websites and find out information from all different sorts of sources with a great amount of freedom. Obviously, in some settings, like in the schools, that's a little tricky, but even so, it's possible for people to pull up all kinds of information. And in those cases where groups like Common Sense or Normal or others are basically pulling information from the government, and analyzing it and then presenting it. I mean, really, you know, anybody could, if they had the ambition and a little bit of skill, anybody could go into those federal websites and find some of the same data. The trick is that now that we have the Internet and things are online, it's a lot easier to. Back in the old days, you'd have to go to a government repository library, one of the handful around the country, or you'd have to go direct to the bureau and go back and forth with letters and phone calls, ordering information, requesting catalogs and all that. Very time-consuming and very daunting and confusing for people who've never done it before. That's the one thing. It makes it so much easier to find the information you want quickly. People are going out and doing it. When we started back in the old days, Common Sense for Drug Policy had its basic web page. It was a gateway to drug war facts or to other organizations. We changed that and turned CSDP into more of a current events-oriented site with news and information and gave Drug War Facts its own website. It was astounding. We doubled our web traffic within a month, and it continues to grow, which is great. We have several thousand people on a daily basis who hit one or the other of our websites, and we're small players in comparison to national organizations, membership organizations. As a private foundation, we don't have members, and we're not reaching out to try and do fundraising among individuals. So, you know, that people hear about us is fantastic. With an organization like Normal, which is, of course, a membership organization doing outreach to individuals all the time, groups like Drug Policy Alliance and others doing the same thing, the thousands and thousands of people who are reaching out, to us and to everybody in Reform on a daily basis, I mean, it's just astounding. And even if all they're doing is getting information, it'd be great if they join and start putting money into it and all that, but, you know, first steps. The first step is to get them informed. And if we can get some information, get those ideas out there. Peter Schickele once said, ideas are like pollen. Once they're in the air, you never know who's going to sneeze. And the Internet's beautiful for that.
Doug, a few weeks ago, I was at the Cato Institute having my first in-person encounter in the form of a lecture by the ONDCP, Office of National Drug Control Policy's chief scientist, David Murray. I felt I was pretty prepared for the propaganda on his part, but I was still rather aghast at the angry vehemence of this individual, David Murray, as he spouted the worst of reefer madness lies to a very unreceptive audience. You know, Doug, having covered this type of events for some time and seen the propaganda warriors out there from the government, what are some of the real standout experiences for you?
It is one thing that's astounding is that they're even willing to talk to us now. I mean, for the longest time, the people on the other side, the drug warriors, were unwilling to appear on the same podium as a reformer. They're unwilling to meet us directly in debate. It's still true to an extent, but that they're putting Murray out there was just astounding. David Murray's been doing this for a very long time. He was working on these things and taking the same line since well before he went to ONDCP. And the organization he used to front, called STATS, since he left, has turned around completely. Now Maya Solovitz is one of their chief analysts, and they're very much taking a skeptical look at prohibition, and pretty sure they're not going to be questioning whether prisons and the drug war generally are racist anytime soon, as they did while Murray was there. And so he's been saying this stuff and getting away with it because it's the usual thing. They'll be the last person that the reporter talks to, so they get to lie, and no one gets to say, oops, that was a lie, so it just gets published. But he's been found out as a liar. And I don't like to use that word a lot because it's very rude, but the man lies. He lies a lot, and he's built his career on these lies. I really have to wonder if he has any real notion of what truth is these days, because he has been a professional liar on some of this stuff for a very long time. whether it's about syringe exchange or the racist nature of the drug war or the effectiveness of prisons, whatever. Murray's fingerprints are all over ONDCP's rhetoric in the last few years. And, but again, it goes back to, like I said, I mean, on the facts, we won on the facts. If you actually get to looking at it, the problem can be, you know, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with BS, right? And so with a person like Murray, I'll just keep on spewing the stuff, and unless you can track back the study or the report he's referring to, it's awfully difficult to refute. I don't know if you caught it a couple of years ago, the Washington Post did that. They had been talking about syringe exchange, and Murray at OND's, well, they didn't identify who at ONDCP, but someone at ONDCP provided them with three different studies that purport to say that near syringe exchange doesn't work. And they checked the studies and they talked to the researchers at the Post did. And the researchers said, no, our research shows it does work. And we support needle exchange. And we don't know what this guy is talking about. And, shot him down. Made a beautiful editorial in the Washington Post. Long editorial, because they don't like being lied to by the feds. It's weird. I think to work at the Post, you have to believe that the government really does, that the people from the government really are there to help you. But when you finally get disabused of that notion, oof, they get upset. And like I say, Murray's a professional liar. It's not surprising that he is. He's not quite as dispassionate as you'd expect. Like his career, for the last 8-10 years, his career has been built on this stuff. And it's all just a house of cards.
Doug, we also ran into each other in covering the ONDCP's random student drug testing seminars in Newark, New Jersey earlier this year. For me, it was totally a visit to the Twilight Zone. One of the East Coast's more prominent prohibitionists was there. His name is David Evans of Flemington, New Jersey. Evans spoke a lot of misinformation, but did it with a lot of passion as well. You know, how do we best combat that type of drug warrior out there, that type of prohibitionist who really uses nothing more than fear to sway the audience?
Well, as I say, you have to do it with passion ourselves. Part of it's going back to why we're doing this stuff in the first place. I mean, nobody gets involved in drug policy. Well, no one who's really involved in drug policy, people might come to a meeting thinking something like, ooh, I wonder who I can get weed from. But if you stay involved, you know that that's not a way to be sure to be the person who always has it. It's the way to be sure you're the person everybody tries to ask, which is not a way of being sure to be the person who always has weed. That's the way of being sure to be the person who's always getting hit on for some, which is why some people just say, no, I don't do it anymore. Go away. It's great. It's being involved in drug policy. We're here not because we are looking for a party. If you want a party, there are a lot easier ways of doing it. This is work, and we're doing this stuff because we have a passion for the work that we're doing. Many of us are social justice activists. Some of us have had personal experiences which have motivated us to move forward, whether it's seeing someone getting screwed up by the system, or having a friend or having yourself get done over by the system. A lot of reasons, but there's a reason. Again, there is a reason. And it's not just to have a party. It's a good reason. In fact, like I keep saying, the prohibitionists don't have a positive vision. They have a really awful vision where people are evil and terrible and need to be controlled and need to be watched every day because, ooh, yes, they're just going to do terrible things because people are evil. And that's an awful kind of way to be. I mean, that's just terrible. I think that people, if you bring them upright and you give them enough information and enough love and enough support, I think people will turn out just fine. So we need to have a system that can do that, that can let people do that. And this is where, I think we need to be better at articulating our own positive visions, at clarifying that we are indeed the people who our parents would look up to, that we're the role models. I mean, we're also very nice, very quiet, very self-effacing, very modest people because, hey, we're progressive reformers. That's just the kind of people we are, which is good, but it's not enough. We really do have to match their passion with passion. And we can't demagogue. That's ridiculous. We'll end up making fools of ourselves. There is, however, there's a fine line, obviously, to walk. But it really is about standing up and knowing that the facts are behind us, but having the courage of our convictions to be able to articulate that positive vision and to be who we are, to be people of good character. And yet we're also in favor of these reforms. That's really all it's going to take. That is all it's going to take. That's not all that simple, but it sounds simple to say. It's simple to say. And I do believe that is exactly all it's going to take.
Well, Doug, this has been a wonderful conversation here today. Many, many thanks for joining us here on the Audio Stash, and I look forward to having you back again very soon.
Chris, I'm available anytime. This is fun. As you can tell, I enjoy talking into a microphone.
Well, many thanks again, Doug. Have a very good day. Doug McVeigh is the Director of Research at Common Sense for Drug Policy. He edits their print publications and websites. We have links to it all up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. You've been listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.